Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome in to the Bet the Board, a podcast powered by BetOnline.ag. Conference Championship Weekend. Get excited. You can feel the energy in the air as football has three meaningful games left on the schedule. I am your fearless leader, Todd Furman, joined by my esteemed colleague and co-host, a man who's played hurt over the last week and a half. We thought we were going to lose you for a couple days, Payne. I'm glad you were able to carve out an hour to join us and help break down these big matchups.
I'm back and sick. You've taken me away from my basketball. Here we are, though.
I mean, every now and again, it's okay to diversify that portfolio as we begin to put a bow on the football season. I know you're fully immersed in the hoop side of things. Big show on tap for folks. You know, we'll touch on a little bit of the surprise coaching firing that came out of the Tennessee Titans loss on Saturday night. I'm sure, Payne, you have a rant all queued up to go, go all in on Mike Tomlin. Dave Mason stops by to talk about how the book performed last weekend and what they're looking to accomplish this weekend. And, of course, conference championship games, big game breakdowns brought to you courtesy of the American Sports Betting Coalition. So rather than going with my agenda here this morning, Payne, I want to give you the floor. Where would you like to start?
I don't really care. This is your call.
Do you want to pat yourself on the back and feel validated by the Titans parting ways with Mike Mularkey, or you want to just go all in on Tomlin? I mean, it's one of those two spots where I feel like you're going to give an epic rant that would be worthy of an Academy Award type performance.
I feel like you're trying to set me up here. I don't have much of a voice today.
I'm not trying to set you up. I saw your tweet. I was going to just let you use your tweet and build on that.
Well, I think there was a lot of... you're a fan of dancing on graves. I can.
No bullshit on dancing on graves. Besides, wait a second. Mike Tomlin's not 6 feet under. I want to dance at him right now. He's still fully employed.
I was leaning towards Mike Mularkey there, but I'm just saying Mike Mularkey was fired. This one thing we don't do here is the hot take stuff, which is pretty good. And now that we're playing Thursday morning quarterbacks, we didn't have a Monday morning podcast. I know this has been touched on by a lot of folks, but we usually do it the right way. It's not a hot take way. And I think the Mike Mularkey thing is just a matter of, hey, they woke up, they realized they made a mistake, they fixed the mistake, they said, hey, we made a mistake. They told the world, they told them publicly, and they weren't afraid of getting a little crap on their face for it. But they inevitably made the right decision, which is the best decision. When you watch the Titans last week, I mean, they didn't bring anything new to the table. Nothing. Mike Mularkey, he dressed four defensive linemen last week. Four. And so when we watched early in the game, we're like, oh, the Patriots are struggling a little bit here. Yeah, because like Jarrell Casey and those guys, they were getting after him. They were getting some pressure on him. Once the fatigue set in, they didn't have a prayer because he dressed four guys. So that was like the first bad thing. And then the debacle before halftime. I mean, two-year-olds aren't fumbling that situation away. Did you see what he did before halftime?
I mean, there's a lot of things that we can point to, but...
He called a timeout.
Most prudent move.
He called a timeout. His last... to run the football. Let's just say it's a best-case situation, and they get the first down there. Then what? Then you're scrambling to the line of scrimmage, hoping to just snap the ball into the ground. Maybe there's 10 seconds left. Then what? Then you're forced to throw something else. He called a timeout to run the ball into the line of scrimmage with no timeouts left with 24 seconds. I mean, you can't.
Maybe there's an incentive. Maybe there's an incentive clause. You know, there was some money on some of the prop prices. He hoped that they could break one. Obviously not the smartest move we're ever going to see in that type of situation in a football game.
No. I mean, it's bad, bad. And then Mike Tomlin, of course. I think we could probably break it down differently than most. I know everyone's got the hot takes on Tomlin this week, so I don't want to go that way. I kind of want to be a little more serious with that. And we probably break it down pregame issues and then, you know, quickly within what happened. And we touched on Tomlin prior, I think during week 17, we talked about this. So this isn't even new. And they were sitting out all their key cogs on offense week 17. And we're like, this is a little shaky here. I don't think this is the best situation because you have the wild card coming and you want these guys to get mental reps throughout the week, pretend like they're playing so they care at practice. And then they come out and I don't care. You don't want to get anybody injured in week 17, but treat it like a preseason game where, hey, that first possession against the Browns, if they go down and you get points, take them out. If they look inept and they go three and out, maybe you give them a second possession or a third possession. But you can't have your team not play like the key cogs, like Ben and Bell and like four guys on your offensive linemen. They didn't see live bullets for like 21 days. And you wonder why you come out slow.
The other big thing here is,
and everyone applauds Tomlin for being a player's coach. That's the issue. Like we charted this, like on the 10th, Mike Mitchell was coming out talking about the Patriots saying they could play him anywhere on the planet and the Steelers are going to win that game. To any competent head coach, that's not a good sign of like emotional and like mental state that you want to have from one of your leaders. I would have nipped that in the bud like immediately. To me, that says, hey, this isn't a good sign, like where my guys are at in the locker room. But he didn't, because 3 days later, Le'Veon Bell's tweeting about the rematch versus the Patriots. So he didn't even address it. So it was a non-issue to him, and it got him thinking that way, meant because he's a player's coach. I'm sure he was thinking the same exact way. And then later on in the game, we see when they try to execute the onside kick, it looked like it was something that they had never practiced before. The onside kick went four goddamn yards into their own player. So my feeling is they probably didn't even practice the onside kick at week because they were all saying, hey, this is going to be easy. We're moving on to the next round. Probably they didn't even cross their mind that they'd would be behind and would even need an onside kick. That was the pregame stuff.
The 4 yards the onside kick went is better than the 4 yards backwards they elected to go on a fourth and inches play when you're running a pitch right into the strength of the Jacksonville defense. So
the pitch, either the way, pitch outside to the short field on an athletic team?
I mean, clearly he didn't scout the team and know exactly what Jacksonville was going to elect to do. Then you get Big Ben throwing his coach under the bus saying that there is no quarterback sneak in the playbook. I mean, there are so many issues that the Steelers have when you look at that roster. And you said early in the year, there's not a team in the league probably that had a more talented roster top to bottom. I know they had the unfortunate circumstances with losing Shazier on the defensive side, but there are enough playmakers, both offensive and defensively, if they are buttoned up and do things the way they need to and run like a normal organization where the head coach takes ownership of his players rather than trying to be that parent on the block who's the best friend buying alcohol for underage kids. Like, go out there, act like an adult, get everybody focused on the task at hand, because you can't play the Patriots unless you beat the Jaguars.
Absolutely. And the one to my tweet, I got a lot of responses about like Andy Reid being a guy that's underachieved, and I agree with that. But Andy Reid also doesn't have a first ballot Hall of Fame quarterback. He doesn't have the most versatile running back in football, and he doesn't have a receiver that's on pace to break some of Jerry Rice's records. He also doesn't have one of the top offensive lines in football. So there's been some issues there. When you talk about in-game, I mean, aside from the pitch play, which I think was mostly Todd Haley's choice, and there's a reason he's gone, throughout parts of that game, you know, looked like Pittsburgh seized some momentum back. They were only down 21-7. They had the ball at midfield going in for a score before break, and they were getting it to start the second half. There was no reason to abandon the run. And at that point, Le'Veon Bell was averaging like nearly 6.5 yards per rush attempt, and they chose to pass the ball 8 straight times against the number one pass defense, against the second best adjusted sack rate defense. And what happens? Big Ben gets sacked, stripped, and Telvin Smith is taking it for 7. So instead of even a field goal of that possession, you're 21-10 at the half, you get out of the break. And even if you suck out of the break and only get a field goal, it's now a one-score game and all the pressure's back on Blake Bortles. So that decision there was bad. And then the final minute, like, you know how you have like the Players Association, the rookie symposium? You need like a rookie head coach symposium. And what you would show is the last 4 minutes of Mike Tomlin and how he executed the game plan. This is what you don't do. And we see it all the time with coaches, not just Mike Tomlin, but you need 2 scores late. 2.
Kick the damn field goal.
With 47 seconds to go, you should be kicking your field goal. So when you do go onside kick and get it back, you have enough time to score again. Juju Smith-Schuster scoring with zero time on the clock makes you look like a foolish idiot.
The only thing that touchdown did late was help folks that had the Steelers right in the second half and were pretty fortunate to cash that ticket.
Jaguars +8 in the second half was very sharp, too. So prayers to professional bettors on that one. The one question here is, we know Todd Haley's gone, but in your mind, let's think about this game for a little bit. So we had the 4th and 10, was it, to Martavis Bryant for a touchdown. We had the 4th and 5. We get the late meaningless touchdown there where the Jags are just giving up yards and letting you score a touchdown. I mean, if the scoreboard is reading 45-21, is Tomlin gone?
I mean, I think that there's already, I mean, we've already read the articles and seen that the Boo Birds are out. There's a lot of pressure from some of the minority owners on Rooney to get rid of him. Like, if you're the Steelers, and I'm never a guy that goes, hey, let's turn back the clock to our glory years. Why are you not putting in a call if you're Rooney and you're loyal? You know, see what it's going to take to get Bill Cowher back. Maybe he wants to try and get back on the sidelines. You can't allow the twilight of their career, which is Big Ben, as he rides off into the sunset, to not try and seize advantage and allow Tomlin to do what he's doing and continue to take this team into the ground. It's mind-boggling to me. It'd be one thing if you didn't have talent and you're not getting the results, but there's talent up and down that roster. And what Pittsburgh does year in, year out, as far as underachieving is concerned, absolutely mind-boggling. And you look at some of these numbers, Payne, you know, some of the stats they've given up in the games that they're eliminated. I mean, they've allowed 23 points or more in all their elimination games going way back to 2004. Came to some of my friends that are diehard Steeler fans. I mean, these numbers are absolutely ridiculous.
I know you had them listed. Do you have the point totals?
You know what? I'm trying to find okay. It right now. And
there's a lot of 30 point performances allowed. There's some 40 point performances allowed. And you know, we always talk about head coaches. What do they do? Where are they good at? And Tomlin's supposed to be a defensive guy, and they're allowing all these points in the most meaningful games. It tells you all you need to know.
Here are the numbers. 2017, obviously the game that just completed on Sunday, they gave up 46 in the loss to Jacksonville. 2016, they gave up 36 in the loss to New England. 2015, they gave up 23 in a loss to Denver. That one comes with an asterisk because I believe that was the one where Big Ben was hurt, right? Dealing with like the AC joint when they made the trip to Denver.
It was also a guy named Tebow.
No, that was not the Tebow game.
Not the Tebow game.
2015. Okay. The Tebow game was in 2011 where they were eliminated. They gave up 29 points in that one. 2014, they gave up 30 to Baltimore. 2010, they gave up 31 to Green Bay. 2007, 31 to Jacksonville. And 2004, 41 in New England. That 2004 team, I believe, was coached by Cowher.
Yeah.
But little to say, I mean, this is a team, when they go out in a blaze of glory.
It was a bad game, man. Just from every aspect, it was bad for the Pittsburgh Steelers. You kind of feel bad for their fan base a little bit. I know they have all these Super Bowl rings, but of late, they should have stockpiled a bunch more.
Definitely deserved a better fate for what we've seen, you know, so far. But
that's it for me. I don't think my voice can handle the rest of this.
Well, that's why we're going to transition away from a rant into the team that beat them. And the Jaguars do deserve some credit for their particular performance. And, you know, we'll get to the Vikings. I want to get your take on how that game ended against the Saints, but we'll do that as part of the Vikings breakdown and what you would have been saying to Marcus Williams before and after the Minnesota Miracle or whatever they're calling it right now. But let's break down the first game on Sunday, which is Jacksonville in New England, where you're looking at New England, an 8.5-point favorite at betonline.ag, Payne. Total on this game at 46. May as well start with the point spread and total. Fair or foul will this number opened?
I would think we made it 8. Looking at or trying to remember our numbers, we made this game 8. So opening it up in the 9.5 area isn't a bad idea when you talk about the liability that you get from the public on New England games, and you also start the week protecting yourself from teasers. So I think it makes some sense now, not to spoil everything in the beginning, but there was some movement on New England for a purpose early in the week, and that was to achieve Jacksonville plus 10. So we have seen some professional money on Jacksonville at 10 on the bye. So that philosophy of protecting yourself from teasers backfired just a little bit.
Every now and again it does. When books try and get too cute, they can create a little bit of extra value. Now as we sit in the dead zone, be interesting to see where it goes. As we've talked about at great lengths in this podcast, it doesn't take a ton to drive a number from 7.5 up to 9 or vice versa from 9 down to 7.5. You do wonder if you'll have some folks looking to buy the Patriots down. But we'll start with the coaching here. The level of familiarity, maybe not so much with Bill Belichick and Doug Marrone, although those guys have a history of going head-to-head. But I want to go a little bit deeper, knowing that if there's one fly in the ointment for this New England Patriots dynasty, he just happens to be a member of the Jaguars front office. And I ask you, how much do you think Tom Coughlin is involved in preparing a game plan, knowing what he did as head coach of the Giants to slow down Brady and the high-powered Patriots offense?
You know, not necessarily just for this game, but all season. I mean, there's a reason Coughlin brought in Doug Marrone, and it's because he wanted to have a say with what goes on in the football field, not just from acquiring talent, But managing it week to week, you can see Tom Coughlin down on the sidelines at practice pretty frequently. He's got a whistle in hand. He's got his shorts on. So I would expect, just like most weeks, he's going to have a hand in this. And it's not going to be rocket science, right? It's going to be, hey, we're going to rush four here. And we're gonna defend with seven in the back. And we're going to play man coverage. And that's just what they do. And that was the recipe that helped the Patriots to beat the Patriots in two Super Bowls. Now, I did look back at some of those numbers. Brady was certainly not himself, but they didn't completely shut him down in the two matchups that completed 63% of his passes, like 6.1 yards per pass attempt. So didn't completely shut Brady down. There just was no semblance of a ground game. That was the other thing they did very well. They stopped the ground game, and then they played man coverage behind it, which we'll see if the Jaguars can do that. They've had some issues stopping the run.
Aside from that level of familiarity, there's also another note that I'm not sure anybody but us will talk about in regards to preparing for this particular game. These two teams spent 3 days practicing against one another as part of training camp. You know, what do you think, in your opinion? I know teams are very different now as we look at the conference championships than what they were way back in August. But do you think smart coaches like Coughlin and Belichick will go back and use that film to try and identify whether it's receivers tipping their hand, certain play selection, or anything along those lines? Or are we making too big of that potential storyline?
For sure. And I think it probably benefits New England a little bit more because they're going to be able to counter off that. Now, there is a slight caveat to that. You know, when they were having these scrimmages, the word that I got was Bortle wasn't very, very good. He basically inherited, you know, Chad Henne's check down method. Check down Chad became, you know, check down Blake Bortles. Wasn't very confident, but that was during the time where he was struggling in preseason and throughout camp. So I think we have a little different version of Bortles here, but you can certainly glean some information from what transpired through those 2 days. It was 2 days of full scrimmaging, and then the third final day was more of a walkthrough. New England's defense didn't feel very threatened, although there was mention that Marquise Lee had some great success paired against Butler. So maybe that's something we can look at here, or maybe they're, you know, New England's smart enough, and it's going to be Gilmore that's now shadowing Marquise Lee based on what transpired at the scrimmages. But yes, I think it certainly plays a role. You'll go look at film just like you would any other matchup, I would think. The other thing here is, you know, there's some familiarity with some of the players involved that have faced Jacksonville recently. You know, Kyle Shanahan, we know him and Belichick are buddies. Kyle Shanahan had great success game planning against this Jacksonville defense. Now, it was kind of a tough spot for Jacksonville. They weren't very fully committed in that game, but formationally, tendency wise, you're going to pick up a lot of things. Shanahan and Belichick are going to talk a lot this week.
You think Jimmy G and Tom Brady are trading notes as well?
I don't think that relationship is as strained as people think, but maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to make of it. We knew there was noise inside the Patriots locker room about a little bit of a fracture between Brady, Belichick, and Kraft, but I won't claim to have any insider knowledge as to how Brady and Garoppolo feel about one another, the potential relationship, or what goes on between them at this juncture in their careers.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I wouldn't use that as a handicapping angle, but I think Shanahan and Belichick have certainly been talking this week, just from what I've been hearing.
When we look at this game, Payne, which matchup do you think ultimately decides it? I mean, is it the Jaguars' ability to run against the Patriots' defense? Is it Brady's ability to throw against the number one rated secondary of Jacksonville? Is it special teams? Is it something that nobody else is talking about out there?
I think it has to be Jacksonville's ground game. I really do. I mean, I get, and we can get to Jacksonville's defense a little bit later on. That's certainly going to be priority. They're going to have to stop New England without question. But I just don't think you can shut New England down for 60 minutes. At some point, you're going to need something offensively. You're going to have to be able to run the ball. And the question mark is, you know, which Fournette are we going to get? Last week, we got beast mode. Against Buffalo and pretty much throughout the latter part of the season, we got, you know, pity pat feet Fournette. I think it looks like he re-aggravated his ankle that's been bugging him. I would be stunned if he's 100%. TJ Yeldon has certainly shouldered a much larger role now that they activate him, which they didn't do for the Bills game. So I think
still rather curious as to what actually prompted that decision, illness or not, unless he's in his deathbed. The fact he wasn't even available to go is mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, I mean, so I think Yeldon will have a role in this game, especially out of the backfield. We know that's where the Patriots are a little bit susceptible, the running back pass. I believe third worst in that regard, surrendering catches to running back. So Yeldon should make some hay in that regard. The biggest thing here is, though, and we saw it last week, which we got to give Bortles confidence early. He didn't have a single turnover-worthy throw last week. Early on in the game, we got him confident. There was no emotional, there was no down, the head wasn't down. And I think a lot of folks, you know, they'll pick up on what we talk about. It's like, hey, you got to throw on first down. You got to throw on first down. It's the way you throw on first down. That's the biggest thing. And we saw Bortles got hot early. It carried over late. I was pretty shocked to see Bortles late in that game. There was pressure on him. Pitt cut it to a one-score game. You had that huge third and long completion of Marquise Lee, which enabled the play action from under center on first down when they hit that big play to Cole. And then Pitt cut it to one score again, and you had Bortles third and five to TJ Yeldon, which we were talking about out of the backfield. He led him perfectly, and I think the best thing on that throw is when you watch the All-22, he came out under center. He was looking center. He was looking right. He came back all the way around. Yeldon was his fourth or fifth progression. So that was fantastic. And then you hit D.D. Westbrook on a third down as well. So Bortles was huge late in that game. It's because they got him confidence early.
How much of Jacksonville's offensive success last week do you attribute to Pittsburgh's defense being an absolute abortion?
That was the one thing we touched on. And, you know, I don't like playing Monday morning quarterback. I'm an idiot for not having a Jaguars ticket at least early on in that game. And the one thing you can quote me as saying last week on the podcast, I said, if Jacksonville can run the ball, they have a good chance to win the game. And that was what we saw. Without Ryan Shazier out, that run defense for Pittsburgh was horrific. And that's going to be the case again this week. They're going to have to run the ball. There's no way Blake Bortles can win this game on his own. So if they can't run, you'll get the snowball effect. And this is one thing we touched on last week where metrically, right, this is one thing where you kind of have to not be a robot. You have to step out. You have to have a feel for these things. Because metrically, everything pointed to the Titans being able to run the ball last week. And I said, listen, I'm looking at their formations. I look at their scheme. They tip their hand when they want to run. It's pretty basic. Bill Belichick's going to be able to figure this thing out. And sure enough, they stopped that run. So that's going to be the big thing here is if Jacksonville can run, they're going to have a shot. If they can't, and it's all on Bortles, I don't care how good your defense is.
Yeah, I have to think that New England, I mean, what we've seen from the Patriots time and time again, if you're going to beat them, you have to do it with your secondary and tertiary weapons. You're not going to do it with your primary method. And I really believe that they're going to sell out to try and stop the run and force Blake Bortles to beat him over the top.
Here,
when we look at when we look at the other side of the ball, you talk about a ground game and how important that is. New England obviously showing a renewed commitment to Deion Lewis, 78 carries, 351 yards over his last four games. He's also caught 20 balls in his last three. How important is Lewis getting on track if the Patriots are going to have success against a Jacksonville defense, who I know a lot of people want to talk about, and you know some of the stats are tremendous. But for me, Payne, I always feel like something's lacking when I watch that unit from start to finish.
They do have some areas of concern, without question. You can run the ball on them, and we've charted this along the way. They couldn't stop the run initially. They get Marcell Dareus in the trade, and for about a month, 5 weeks, they did a very good job stopping the run. They became an average unit. When you start to look at success rate after that juncture, which we discussed last week, they go back to being very porous. So this should be a heavy Deion Lewis game, at least on first and second down, you would think. We talked about how great he has been this year. Number one running back. When we look at a lot of these metrics, the big thing for me here is I think we're going to see a lot of formations. To me, it says this is going to be a Burkhead game. This is going to be a White game. This is going to be a Deion Lewis game. I think we're going to see all three of those. I don't think there's a situation where the Patriots are going to be dumb enough to think they're going to be able to go 3 and 4 wide and we're going to have Tom Brady chuck it 55 times because that's just not going to work against this Jaguars defense. I think we're going to see some bunch formations. I think we're going to see a lot of play action. I think we're going to see potentially two tight end sets. I just think we're going to see a lot of what Shanahan implemented offensively to really stifle this Jaguars defense. The one thing that becomes somewhat of a concern is the Jaguars should be able to get some pressure with their front four, especially Calais Campbell. He's just a monster operating in the middle. So that could throw some things off track. We're going to see that press man coverage from your corners. I want to see who they match Gronk up with. That's the biggest thing for me. And I think if, you know, the Jaguars...
I mean, will it be a linebacker? Or are you going to see Ciprian in coverage? I mean, what scenario do you think playing out? Like, if you're the Jaguars DC, who do you try and put on Gronk?
Well, if it's me, it's going to be Ramsey. When we looked at this a little bit, we dug in. And I think everyone thinks Miles Jack is athletic. And listen, he is. He hasn't been great covering the tight end this year. When you look at just what Miles Jack has done, he's allowed 78% completions to tight ends, 3 touchdowns, and a passer rating of 139. I don't think that's the option you go with. I think it has to be Ramsey, because you can try Jack, you can try Telvin Smith. They're athletic linebackers, but over the course of 60 minutes, Gronk's going to eat them up. Sure, they might have success one play here, one play there, but if you're going with those two linebackers on Gronk for 60 minutes, you're going to get beat up. It has to be Ramsey.
Ramsey physical enough to endure that kind of punishment from start to finish?
Mentally, he is. You know,
well, mentally, I mean, I know all Florida State guys are mentally tough, so they all think that they're the best at what they do, whether it be playing football or any other variety of activities. So,
I mean,
you figure he's got the confidence.
He has the confidence. And when you're talking, which he's doing a lot of talking this week, it scares me. I don't know why the Jaguars are talking this week. And the Patriots are really taking the opposite approach. They're doing a lot of praising. And Talvin Smith kind of spotted. He came out this week. He's like, well, I know he's the GOAT, but he's playing with our heads. He keeps praising us.
Yeah, we've seen this before. When the Patriots start praising their opponents, it's almost as though they've uncovered something they know about and they're going to expose to the entire universe when this game kicks off at Foxborough. One interesting note in this game, Payne, that I uncovered, and it's not a large sample size. I mean, you look at Tom Brady and what he's been able to accomplish. The Patriots, the number one passing league in the NFL. The Jaguars, number one against the pass. This is the fourth meeting where we've seen the number one passer match up against the number one pass defense in a playoff game going back to 1990. The number one pass defense, 3-0 in those games. Now, I know it's more a fun stat to talk about than anything else, and Tom Brady on a different level than some of these other quarterbacks, but it's always fascinating because you hear the cliche, you know, a championship caliber defense can beat a championship caliber offense, but I almost feel like everyone is discounting what New England has been able to do defensively, a team that hasn't given up more than 17 points in a home game since pretty much early October.
The one thing here for the Patriots defense, and I think we're all accustomed to it. We've heard it, you know, 100 times by now this week, you know, the bend but don't break style and how effective they are forcing opponents to take 3 when they reach the red zone. But if you're paying close attention, New England's starting to get a lot more pressure of late. And eventually that turns into sacks. And you saw this past weekend, they pressured Mariota 19 times. They also had 8 sacks on 48 total dropbacks. And if you rewind this, because I paid close attention, week 12, they're playing my beloved Dolphins. And at the time, New England was dead last in the NFL. They had like 8 total sacks. And over the last 7 game sample size, New England has 33 sacks. And so a lot of the players have stepped up for sure. But a lot of it's scheme, and you start to throw on the all-22 and you're going to see New England does a fantastic job of identifying what your weakness is on that offensive line and attacking that one spot, whether it's with 2 guys, whether it's with 3 guys, they attack that specific spot. So the defensive line has stepped up and not just getting pressure, but it's helped them stop the run as well. I'm looking at this right now. The last 3 games, 34% of runs are grading successful against New England's defense. We all thought that was a weakness. The first 14 weeks, 53% of runs were grading successful. So we've seen a massive upgrade there. And a lot of it is some fire within those guys. We thought Alan Branch would come back, play last week. Supposedly he said he was healthy. They didn't make him active. Let's see if they make him active this week. But supposedly it's been a battle on the inside at practice with all those interior defensive linemen, which ones are going to be active this week. They're basically all playing for their jobs throughout the course of the week in practice. So maybe that's helped a little bit, but a lot of it to do with scheme.
And I know a lot of our listeners, they're going to hate the Patriots. They've cost a lot of folks a lot of money along the way, and I'm not a Patriots fan by any stretch of the imagination, but it's not coincidence that they'll be playing in their seventh straight AFC championship. This team plays its best football when the games matter most. And oh, by the way, they just happen to be 19-6 against the spread the last 25 games that they've played in Foxborough. Little to say, books not necessarily charging the Patriots premium that they should be if you want to back a good team. I'm interested to get Dave Mason's take. You mentioned some sharp money. I'm wondering if he's seen the same thing at betonline.ag.
That'll be interesting. But yes, you know, with all that said, very sharp money on Jacksonville, plus 10, minus 20. The one interesting, the mindless trend, which I hate, but I just managed. I must have been using the porcelain throne this morning and came across an IG trend, but it was like Tom Brady. AFC championship appearance percentage is higher than Blake Bortles' lifetime completion percentage. So that's the mindless trend of this game. And it's all going to come down. Can you get some pressure on Brady? I know a lot of people in the news have been talking about that this week on radio, talking about that. Certainly, if you can get pressure on Brady with four, it's going to make your case for, you know, defensive success much better. He's still a monster. I mean, he's got the best passer rating in the NFL this year. When under pressure, it's 97. Last week, he was pressured 13 times, had a passer rating of 102 on his dropback. So the key is certainly getting pressure up the middle. That's where he hates it most, but he's still pretty effective under pressure. So it'll be interesting to see what the Jaguars do. I think they'll have a chance here if somehow they can force New England to play catch up, if they go with Ramsey on Gronk immediately. And I'm not saying Ramsey's going to win that matchup all the time. You just can't do that, but it's certainly going to be a better option than starting Miles Jack on him. So this is going to be an interesting cat and mouse matchup.
You know what? It's always curious to see how the public elects to bet some of these games. And thankfully, Payne, we have the perfect man for the job. He's with us here every single Thursday throughout the National Football League season on the Bet the Board podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. And Dave, lay it on us, brother. How'd the divisional round go for the good guys last Saturday and Sunday?
Very good. Very good. Eagles was great. Jaguars was very good. The New England game went to the players, but that was probably our third biggest decision. And then that crazy Saints-Vikings game was pretty much a chop. Lost on the total, won big on the money line. Lost a little bit on the spread. You know, that number's all over the place, so you got some middle action. But, if they went for the extra point, that game would have been massive. But, you know, looking at the opposite end, if Vikings didn't score that last touchdown, we would have got murdered. So the chop is fair with that game.
The middle, better than the outright win. That's big. As we look at this week, there's a lot of big games, obviously. Championship weekend. What do we expect for handle? Is it going to be bigger than last week?
Oh, yeah. Well, overall, I don't think so because it's two games versus four. But for those two games, yeah, it will, you know, compared to two games last week, most definitely. The early action is very good. Who are they betting? The action is pretty even right now. 52% of the bettors are on the Patriots, currently minus 8.5. And the Vikings are the side in that other game with 59% of the early bettors on the Vikings. But, yeah, overall so far, it's not looking like we're going to have a huge sweat. That can all change, though, but that's what we're looking at so far.
That's not bad, 52% on the Patriots. That's got to be a welcomed thing for your house.
Yeah, right? It's considered they bend this over each and every week, but yeah.
Anything for pro action?
A little bit. Eagles early at plus 3.5. A little bit on the Jags, plus 9.5. We thought Patriots was sharp early, but it wasn't. I think it's a little phony baloney action going on.
That makes sense. Get it up to 10, key number.
Yep.
Todd, you have anything?
Well, Dave, I wanted to ask, you know, we talked a little bit about the two big games this weekend, but you guys also have some look-ahead numbers available for the Super Bowl should folks want to try and get down prior to perception changing on Sunday. Have you guys seen any volume come in on those four potential matchups?
On one of them. there's some good action coming in on the most likely game, which is the Vikings at Patriots with about 81% of the bets, early bettors on the Patriots. But, yeah, that's getting some good action, good early action.
What line is that, Dave?
Patriots are now -2.5, -118.
Okay, so you guys have seen action. You guys actually open lower than most places. Most places open that 3 on the look ahead, so I could see why you guys are getting a little New England action. But you guys should be fine.
Yeah, there's actually more bets on the Patriots than the other seven teams combined for the other four potential – or the other three potential games. So that's how much money's coming in on the Patriots early. I mean, some, you know, the Jaguars, Eagles, there's hardly any bets coming in on that. I guess people either aren't interested in the line or just don't think that game will be happening. So,
Let's keep our fingers crossed. That's not the game that we're talking about right here on this channel 2 weeks from now, because I don't think it adds a lot of intrigue. I don't think it has a star power, and I'm not sure the props will offer a whole heck of a lot of opportunity. But, you know, mentioning props along with the games and obviously college basketball, the NBA, NHL, et cetera, in full swing, Dave, if folks are looking to try and take advantage of some of the earliest numbers in the industry, what promotions are available at betonline.ag for our loyal Bet the Board listeners?
Yes, sir. It's with the conference championship this weekend, is a perfect time to sign up for an account at betonline.ag. Use promo code 75BTB for a one-time 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account but have not used the Bet the Board reload bonus yet, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% bonus. All terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
He's the best in the business for a reason. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Dave, enjoy your bye week. I know it'll be hard at work trying to come up with all sorts of unique creative props. You are the king of cleavage when it comes to the Lombardi Trophy, so we'll expect some unique nuances in that particular market this year like we've seen in the past.
All right, fellas.
I know, Payne, we haven't broken down the Vikings-Eagles game, which we're going to get to in a matter of minutes as part of our, you know, big game breakdown from the American Sports Betting Coalition. Are you surprised at all of the two games that if one of them was going to be lopsided at BetOnline right now, it's actually the Vikings-Eagles game more so than the Patriots-Jaguars game, which Mason indicated is nearly split right down the middle?
That is interesting. It tells me that folks are buying into the Jaguars. It tells me that
is it dangerous when people buy into teams looking for reasons to fade New England? I feel like every time it's trendy to go against New England, it never really ends well.
What's always interesting is you'll look at this, you'll say 50-50 action. You know, there's no overwhelming public sentiment. But when you're talking about a New England game, they usually garner, as we've heard from Mason, 70, 80, 85, sometimes even 90% of the tickets there. So 50-50 split is pretty telling. I think folks have bought in. I think the narrative that defensively they're going to be able to get pressure with 4, drop 7. We know, you know, the Coughlin influence, how well they've done, the Giants, his Giants, and they'll think that the same blueprint is here. Let's see. I haven't gone to the window with Jacksonville yet. There seems to be some quiet confidence. And I think we should touch on this a little bit. I am a little surprised the number hasn't continued to come down with the Brady news and the hand.
We didn't even touch on that in the game breakdown. That's on me, obviously, leading the ship into an iceberg more so than actually taking it out into the open water.
The market didn't do much with it. People are saying, from what I've heard, it's a jam. He's got a slight, you know, laceration. He may wear a glove. We're recording this first thing Thursday morning, so it'll be very telling to see the workload at Thursday's practice, which, you know, they're practicing right now, so there won't be intel on that. I know his agent came out and they said, will this have an effect? And the agent said, you know, probably not. So we'll see. Who knows? You'll know pretty quickly when you see him throw that first pass. But
good game to start things off with, the up-and-comers versus the established quarterback. And from that game into the late afternoon, where two quarterbacks who were former teammates did not expect to be in this position at this late juncture in the season. We're looking at the Vikings, a modest 3-point road favorite at betonline.ag. Total on the game, 38.5. I ask you this, Payne. I know we've seen some money coming on the over, but where are these two teams going to go for offense?
It's a good question. Not really sure. Who do you want to touch on first?
You know what? I want to talk about the narrative where a dome team goes on the road in the playoffs and has to play in potentially inclement weather, because I feel like that's the lazy narrative that people are going to use to try and make a stronger case for the Eagles here.
Well, you know, there is some merit to that. There's also some noise in that because, like most teams, the general rule is you perform better at home than on the road. And that's just within your calls, right? You can run your offense. You don't have to go to silent signals. You don't have to worry about the fans disrupting what you're doing offensively. So you're going to see some progression there when you're at home. And that's the reason why there's home field advantage. When you look at this Minnesota team, they're playing outdoors, weren't they? Like 2 years ago for about two or three full seasons. So it's cold there. They play outdoor games in Lambeau Field. They play outdoor games in Chicago. So the weather here is going to be absolutely perfect, I would say, for January in Philadelphia, right? Game time, like 43 degrees, no wind. There's not going to be a lot of weather for this game. So, you know, I'm not sure that that plays a huge role. But we have seen, you know, a slight regression from dome teams when they go out on the road. This is familiar, though. I know they didn't win here last year, but they traveled to Philly last year.
So. Yeah, what was the final score in that game? 21-10, if memory serves me correct?
Yeah, and I believe Bradford at that point was suiting up for Minnesota.
Yeah, he would have been the Vikings quarterback then, probably struggling to move the football like so many Sam Bradford starts. Hopefully Vikings fans don't have to see him out there this weekend. When we look at the Vikings, you wonder about the emotional high that they experienced last week in their improbable victory in the waning seconds against the Saints. Do you think that's the kind of thing that lingers in a good way or a bad way when you go out on the road?
There's no look aheads at this point. I mean, I think that they got over the hump. They're happy to be there. Just win in advance. At this stage, you know what's on the line, and it's hosting a Super Bowl. And it's that simple. And this is going to come down to matchups. It's going to come down to what transpires on the field. When I look at the Vikings offensively, I think this could be a little challenging. Their offensive line, that's what's going to determine their success. When you throw on the tape last week, you don't even really need to. You could watch the game live. The Big Uglies got mauled in the second half last week against the Saints. Keenum's pocket was constantly caved in, and he struggled last week when pressured. He had like a 5 passer rating when he was pressured last week. That hasn't been the overall case this season for Keenum. Man, that was bad.
I see what you did there. I like that.
I wasn't trying to do that. Keenum had the 8th best passer rating when he was pressured this season, so he'll need to be better this week. But Minnesota's offensive line, that they're going to have to hold up here. You look at their full season metrics, they were 6th in pass protection. Just allowed 27 sacks. So they're going to have to hold up here. I think if they do hold up, you can make some plays against that Eagle secondary, especially outside. We also saw last week, you can get your running backs on the edges there. There's plays to be made on that Philly defense. Tevin Coleman was successful in 80% of his runs. A lot of that was outside. So, you know, from a fantasy perspective, I think this is probably going to be more of a Jerick McKinnon game than a Latavius Murray game. You can also make some noise in the slot, it looks like, against that Eagles D, whether you move Thielen inside, which is where he was a lot later on in the season. But last week, none. They kept him outside. I was shocked. And there was a commitment to Jarius Wright. They gave him a larger role. He was constantly manned in the slot. So he could have a nice role here this week. I think Kyle Rudolph could have some success once Hicks got injured in the second Redskins game. Philly's been vulnerable to some competent tight ends. Jordan Reed, Vernon Davis, Jimmy Graham, they've all had success. Late in the year, Evan Ingram went for like 8-87. So I think that's going to be the MO here. If they can get any protection, if they can give Case time, I think you can make some plays on this Philadelphia defense passing the ball. One thing I will say, though, Philadelphia's going to get Sidney Jones back this week, it looks like.
You'd have to imagine that the Vikings are going to have a better scheme to slow down some of the penetration that the Eagles' defensive line can create than what we saw in the second half. As you mentioned, Keenum under duress. And they did nothing, in my opinion, to double-team Jordan. I mean, just figured, hey, we're going to let him live in the backfield. Like, they have to be better and smarter this week to deal with Fletcher Cox, no?
He ended multiple drives in that second half. And that was the one thing, right? We see this game, and it's 17-0. Kai Forbath misses one before the half. Minnesota gets it out of the half. They drive down. They're in field goal range. Case takes a sack on third down. It knocks them out of field goal range. I mean, even if you get bookend field goals there, the game's 23-0, and it's over at that point. You know, you don't have these late heroics. And that'll be interesting to me because we tracked that. We can kind of transition here to the Vikings defense. When we started to track that game a little bit, it was over. It literally was over. Their defense was playing lights out. I thought they played better than the scoreboard indicated. And I just don't care how stout your defense is, right? When you're facing that New Orleans offense, at some point, you're going to give something up. You can't completely shut them down. And so the first 43 minutes, that's exactly what we saw, right? A big zero on the scoreboard. They're averaging about 5 yards per play at that point. You talk about the Saints on the season, 6.3. So they were like 1.3 yards per play under average at that point. Where the game flips on its absolute head is when Sendejo goes out, a great cover safety. He exits with the concussion. And so throw on the tape, you'll see it. At that point, Minnesota's forced to put a linebacker on Kamara when he flexed out wide. Linebackers got stuck on receivers in the slot when New Orleans went 4 and 5 wide. And when you have Drew Brees, the most accurate quarterback in NFL history, he's going to find that weakness and he's going to attack. Even with that, when Sendejo went out, just 5.7 yards per play. So, you know, again, below average of what they were doing. And New Orleans became the beneficiary of short fields. You had the interception. You started possession in the green zone at the 30. You had the blocked punt. You started possession at the 40. You started that possession in the green zone. So I thought Minnesota's defense was fantastic. Sendejo is going to be back this week. So you're not really going to be able to exploit that, I don't think, if you're the Philadelphia offense.
When you look at it, and we know Doug Peterson has been ultra aggressive, you have to love some of his play calls, busting out some looks that he hadn't run at all during the regular season. How do you see a scenario where Philadelphia can consistently move the football against this Minnesota Vikings defense, who, you know, the numbers don't lie. You said they performed a little bit better than what the scoreboard would have indicated last week against the Saints. And Philadelphia didn't exactly light the world on fire en route to 15 points in their win against the Atlanta Falcons.
This is the biggest thing here. And maybe I'm out of my element, but when you had 2 weeks to prepare, you mentally were instilled with some confidence. It looked like that game plan they just threw the kitchen sink at Atlanta. There was nothing complex for Foles. A lot of his passing success came against a team that likes to zone, and it was that RPO. That new RPO that we like to see in the, from the shotgun, where you place it in the running back's belly, you quickly pull it in the slants wide open for 7 or 8. It was a mindless offensive scheme, and it was just, it's like almost college-like. I don't know if we're going to be able to see that kind of success here. I don't know if that, I hate to call it dummy offense, but it's dummy offense. And Atlanta's defense, I know everyone's been raving about their improvement, and certainly it came on the scoreboard where they were limiting teams once they got in the red zone, but it was still the 29th best passing defense. So Foles was going to have some success there. It just felt like they threw the kitchen sink out there offensively. And I don't know what you're going to have for a follow-up. To me, I think you have to work Jay Ajayi here. And that's one thing, you know, too many other backs are being involved. There's a lot of Blunt. There's a lot of Corey Clement, which I get if you're going to use Clement in third down passing situations.
Yeah, keep Blunt on the sidelines. Like, why is he still getting carries?
I'm not sure. Right now, when you look at this, Jay Ajayi averaging 5.8 yards per carry in an Eagles uniform. And this is the one area where you can attack the Vikings defense on the road. Now, it's a short sample, and maybe this is what we're seeing, maybe a little in that dome. There's a difference. They just get going. Against the run on the road this year, 46% of runs grading successful. At home, just 35%. So if Jay Ajayi can get going here, it's certainly going to make Nick Foles' job much easier, and they might have some success. One thing we have been charting here is the Vikings this year, they're not getting as much pressure on the quarterback. They're going to have to get pressure this week. Just 34% pressure on passing snaps. That's down the last two seasons. And that's vital when you're facing Nick Foles. I'm looking at this right now. Nick Foles, shockingly, 106 passer rating with a clean pocket, dips all the way down to 23 when he's pressured. So the Vikings defense has to get pressure here. And they're going to get pressure by stopping the run and forcing Nick Foles to throw.
Are you surprised at all with the way these two respective markets have moved in relation to the Eagles' side number coming down from 3.5 where it peaked now to a soft 3 at betonline.ag? And when you look at the total, that there's been over money coming in trying to figure out how these two teams are going to go about electing to move the football.
Can I be honest?
Sure, fire away.
I've been mind fucked a little bit here with these playoffs. And so a lot of our guys are, you know, provide numbers to these sports books. And we were banging the tables when everyone started to give their look-ahead lines, their flash lines. And, you know, there was talks of, you know, Philadelphia would be -4 in the spot. And we're just like, there's not a prayer. Not a prayer. Yeah,
there was no fucking chance that was happening.
And I kid you not, like 9 days ago, you know, some guys sent us numbers from sportsbooks and said, hey, we're going to open this game. Pick them. And we're just salivating at pick 'em, where we just want to pummel Minnesota at pick 'em. And we're like, that line isn't humanly possible. Like, it can't be the number. The thing's going to close 3. And so we would have loved to have played this game at pick 'em. Well, you know, some places open 3, 3.5, 4, 4.5. So you're going to see sharp money at 4.5, 5. You're going to see some sharp money at 3.5. The line should be probably 3. And this is, here we are, and we don't have an advantage in this game. We were hoping that they would open the number that they were initially going to open 9 days ago. And a lot of those look-ahead lines came out after the Eagles had won last week. So there's no games. There was no games when you were telling me this line was going to be a pick-em. Suddenly the Eagles go win last week. They outperformed the market, and here we open, you know, 4.5.
It's pretty wild the way the numbers have kind of, I don't want to, yeah, I guess I do,
so
have
I've
to
been
say
mind fucked with some of these numbers.
The public perception that we've seen in the past when it comes to the NFL playoffs, I don't think is nearly as pronounced, and you're not getting the gross, wild fluctuations and overreactions in some of these spreads. But I'm right there with you. I mean, when we went through the exercise of trying to figure out what the Eagles would be against a lot of their opponents, had a chance to talk to some of the folks at NBC in Philadelphia and share those numbers with them, I laughed. I said, there's not a way in hell that the Eagles in this current form and construct are going to be favored over anybody in the NFC.
No, and again, here, you can do a lot of great things with this game. When you see a total open 38, I mean, you can do a lot of great things taking Minnesota +4.5 and coming back and laying a cheap money line. That's a hell of a 4.5-point middle in any game, especially one here with a total at 38.5. So this will be interesting to see as we trend down now to soft 3. If this gets to 2.5, is there going to be a different mindset if you can lay a cheap price here with Minnesota? To me, the whole game comes down to which team can run, which team can get after the quarterback. That's most weeks. It will be interesting to see Case Keenum if there's pressure on him. We know that's one thing the Eagles do defensively. They're going to get after you. Not to continue on this game, but looking at this right now, you know, Eagles, they average 7 quarterback hits per game. It's all about pressure for them. And I know a lot of metrics you'll see, you know, Philadelphia 19th in adjusted sack rate. Everyone likes to talk about these metrics, but dig in a little bit deeper. They're actually number 1 in the NFL in quarterback pressures, the Philadelphia Eagles, at 27 more than the second best team. So it's all about getting to Keenum here. If they do, they're going to have a shot. I think this game's going to be tight, obviously, as the spread and the total indicate. But for me, I'm not certain at this particular number if I like Philadelphia. If I have to lay 3 -20 on Philadelphia, you know, I'm not doing that. But again, there has been professional money at 3.5 this week on the Eagles.
Yeah, it's been interesting to try and keep tabs on these games and how the markets have moved. As you mentioned, there's been professional money on the Jags and professional money that's coming on the Eagles, necessarily taking a price. I've kind of the mindset that I'm not sure I'm going to make a case for the Eagles. Wasn't on the side last week. We know we gave out the first half under against the Falcons to our Bet the Board listeners. We were able to cash that despite some interesting clock decisions and miscues late in that half. But I almost feel like if you're running to back the Eagles this week, it's a Johnny come lately type mentality. Not to discourage folks from doing that, as I know some of the folks that we talked to have already taken that approach.
Yeah, for sure. I want to see the follow-up act for Doug Peterson. It's all good when you got 2 weeks and you're getting the guys charged and where you're doing the us against the world and you're wearing the dog masks and you can wear them again this week. Let's see what you come out with scheme wise. This isn't a defense that's playing zone, that can't get after the quarterback. This is a little different defense for Mike Zimmer. They're going to pressure you. They're going to force Foles into tighter windows. He's going to have to throw into tighter windows. He's probably going to have a little more pressure on him. This is going to be a different beast where you don't have 2 weeks. You're not going to have to come up with a counter. You're going to have to come up with a second game plan, which is much tougher in my opinion.
Nothing like a big game breakdown from the American Sports Betting Coalition, where we're talking about Nick Foles matched up against Case Keenum
speaking
for the
of
right
which,
to go to me.
Speaking of which, that this matchup, and we talk about coaches, you hate to keep crapping on guys, and he's probably having a nice relaxing day fishing somewhere. But what does this tell us about Jeff Fisher? That not one.
Oh, that he's a full blown moron.
That not one, but two of his quarterbacks he rostered will be playing in a conference championship game, and not one, but two different coaches were able to find some level of success with Foles and Keenum.
Hey, you never know. Maybe that there's a chance that Fisher gets a chance to coach again in the NFL. I hear the Tennessee Titans have an opening there in Nashville for him.
Oh.
So, you know, one can only imagine how some of this will ultimately unfold. Just absolutely amazing to see, you know, the matchups that we have with three of the elite defenses and, of course, the Patriots, the one constant when we talk about championship weekend. Knowing that these numbers are tighter than what we've seen leading up to a pain, I mean, from a wagering perspective, is there even a smaller position that we should be taking to the window?
Yeah, you know, I'd love to give out a prop here. I'm just not sure it's open to everyone yet, and by the time it does, could be a little different. Don't love anything, but, you know, I just can't see Jacksonville scoring a ton. I will preface it this way. This would be worth about half of whatever you bet last week or what you bet on most best bets. Let's go with the Jacksonville Jaguars team total under, if we can do that. 18.5 out there is the consensus. There is some 19. There is some 17.5. 18.5 seems to be the consensus. So let's go under Jaguars team total at 18.5.
I like it. I like it going off the grid and the reservation a little bit, fading some of the sharp money, but not to say that there's not a scenario where Jacksonville could cover the game potentially as a live dog if they held New England's offense in check. So not exactly a direct correlation, maybe a little bit of reverse correlation there, but I can definitely see the Jaguars struggling to move the football consistently against a Patriots defense that continues to be disrespected, especially for how well they've played at home over the last, you know, 2-3 months or so.
Yeah, without question. I know what the scoreboard indicated, but I don't think Jacksonville can win a shootout in this specific game. But it'll come down to what version of Leonard Fournette we see here. And that prop market opened, and I saw it opened 74.5. So that will be interesting to monitor which direction that goes in. But yeah, not to string on too long. That's the way I would look at this point. But again, I would probably make it half of what you're usually making our best bets for.
Yeah, smaller position, no reason to force. I know a lot of folks want to try and be fully invested, side, total, props, you name it, with only a couple games left on the schedule. But as we've said, and we will continue to say as long as we're on the air, this is about making money long term. It's not about giving you guys action. If we don't feel that there is an edge to be played, we're not going to encourage you to go to the window and throw your money around recklessly offering a best bet or anything, you know, ridiculous and over the top. So a half position for us with the Jaguars team total under 18.5, more or less. Any big plans for you other than getting healthy to watch the games this weekend?
That's it. I plan on taking a nice warm shower and getting into bed, sleeping this thing off. Maybe a little basketball sprinkled in.
Yeah, thankfully you got a bye week then. No show next week for all you loyal Bet the Board listeners out there. We'll be knee-deep in Super Bowl props and prep work to come back with a Super Bowl spectacular, a date TBD. I'm not sure if we're going to do the Wednesday like we've done in the past or Thursday. So be sure to follow at Bet the Board Pod for all updates. We should also have a special guest lined up to help lighten the load for us and maybe loosen the mood a little bit to break things down. But between now and then, I guess, Payne, good luck with all of your hoops wagers and any other way that you elect to get to the window, and we'll be back for our swan song 2 short weeks from now.
Looking forward to it.
Should be good. Special thanks again to Dave Mason. Remember, you can follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. You can follow Payne at Payne Insider. I am Todd Furman. You can follow me there. And our big game breakdown, as always, brought to you courtesy of the American Sports Betting Coalition. For more information on legalization, go to their website, sportsbettinginamerica.com. Good luck to all Jaguars team total under. And come Sunday afternoon, we'll see you at the window.